Over the past couple months, Dakota Midday has featured all the candidates running in next week's primary elections. And today we conclude our primary candidate conversations with Annette Bosworth, who's one of five Republicans seeking the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Democrat Tim Johnson, who's retiring at the end of his term. Annette Bosworth is a Sioux Falls physician and a graduate of Plankton High School and the University of South Dakota Medical School. She says she wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act and stop what she calls out-of-control government spending. She would like government regulations kept to a minimum and supports reform of the current tax system. She joins us at our studios at the University of Sioux Falls. And Dr. Bosworth, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you.
Well, I'll begin with the question I've asked all the candidates who've come on Dakota Midday. Why is it that you're running for U.S. Senate?
Great. That's a wonderful question. Showing up is 90% of the battle these days. When I decided to run for U.S. Senate, I was sitting in a room of physicians in South Dakota, and there was a report that has been done multiple times in the history of South Dakota that says, "Doctor, would you recommend to your children that they go into medicine?" And as you might know, I'm not from a dynasty of physicians. I grew up on a farm and had my own American dream that said I wanted to better myself. And as I did that, I have found one of the most rewarding professions. It's better than anyone ever described. But that poll done last year said, "Doctor, the number of physicians in the state of South Dakota that would recommend this profession to the next generation was less than 15%. And I looked around the room. In past, especially in South Dakota, that poll has been 90% of us would say, this is an amazing place to spend your life and career and give to your community. And I looked around the room and I said, this is us. We are the ones that did not steward this profession, protect the art and science of doing healthcare, and have instead passed on that responsibility to the politicians of this country. And with that, have compromised our amazing career. And of course, that's not a path that's alone in our country. When we take away that American spirit of having your own autonomy in a profession, of making it the best it can be, that falls to pieces every time we give that responsibility to the government. And so I looked around the room and at a heartbreaking moment saw my colleagues, you know, playing words with friends and Angry Birds. They were talking more about retirement than how do you fix it. And I was 41 at the time, now I'm 42, and said, if not me, then who? Who from our profession would stand up and say, no, I understand electronic health records, I'm one of the experts, been taken to the White House because of that. I am of the generation that it is about the population of people you take care of, and that is our responsibility to improve their health. And as soon as you pass that to the government, look at the naughty things they've already done. And I know that firsthand because I run my own company. I am not a corporation. I'm my own small internal medicine company. And I see firsthand what happens when the government organizations began to run the processes more and more and more. And we need somebody who will stand up and say, no, the physicians will better handle this. And they will be accountable for what they do, as opposed to handing that responsibility over to the U.S. government.
And this is related then to your opposition to the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare.
Sure, I mean that's that profession's placement of what happens when the government runs the program. But I think it's the more global approach that says what Obamacare has in store for our health care is what Common Core has done to education. When you get $2,000 of a centralized control, then what happens to your local engagement, the feeling that we can make a difference, it fades every generation. Like there's just nothing we can do about it. And that is one of the greatest fears that I hear about on this campaign trail. Is it even possible to make a difference? And I believe yes. But it takes people who are driven to stand still in the midst of chaos and the discourse that has become our political climate, and still be able to see, why did I do this? And it takes those moments that where I was in that room saying, this is an amazing profession, we cannot let it go. As would a teacher have said 15 years ago, saying, you cannot give this responsibility away from our local school boards. It can't be to the Department of Education. We need to keep it here in my little town. And the further away that autonomy gets, the less engaged your service people are. And go ahead.
Yeah, that gets into a discussion of the role of government. And Dr. Bosworth, I'm curious as to what you see as the role of government today in the U.S.
Sure. Well, of course, let's take it to the federal level. Number one, protect our country. I mean, that is, in our Constitution, protect our country. And as that, keeping that as the forefront, what is in our Constitution and has worked for years, for generations, is to allow your states to have their own responsibility, take ownership of what's happening in your community, engage in the process, and be part of those decisions. And the more we have surrendered that privilege, that honor of the republic of our United States, the less engagement and autonomy. I mean, we've continued to see that fade each generation.
In talking about the role of government in protecting the country as being one of the chief roles of government, that gets into the foreign policy, and President Obama delivered a speech at West Point yesterday arguing that the U.S. can promote its interests through modest agreement and initiatives. I think he used the words hitting singles and doubles. I'm wondering if you've had much of an opportunity to reflect on the president's speech, and wondering what you think of his view of U.S. foreign policy.
You know, I didn't have a chance to see yesterday's speech. I've heard a couple of side conversations about it, but not personally listen to it. But, you know, I think there's a general consensus of the way he's approached his foreign policy. And, you know, there is a common thread that connects the disasters from Benghazi to Boston Marathon bombing to, you know, the kidnapping of the 300 Nigerian schoolgirls, and the Obama administration's failure to deal with the continuing worldwide threat from radical Islamic groups has a consequence. And I think one of the most powerful parts that needs to be corrected is that to reverse the course that, you know, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, you know, they've cheered on the rise of this Muslim Brotherhood and failed to protect are fallen heroes in Benghazi. You know, I really believe that our American foreign policy needs to be brought back to a reality about the growing dangers that are out there and how unique these times are for addressing our threats. It is not, there isn't, you know, a history book that tells us how technology and warfare today is so much different than it's been. But that is where our experts who've been on the front lines, many of which are my friends, who tell me unbelievable stories about the lack of support in the places needed and the abundant funding in places that just does not make sense. And so to answer your question, I have not listened to his speech well enough to know what he exactly said yesterday, but I could guess that it continues to have a trajectory of what he's done for the last 6 years.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're continuing our primary candidate conversations on the program. With us is Annette Bosworth, one of the five Republicans seeking the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Tim Johnson, Democrat, who's retiring at the end of his term. The primary is next Tuesday. Another issue that is in the news is the problems plaguing the Veterans Administration. I'm wondering if you, as a physician, if you have any ideas on how to better handle the way that we're able to treat and deal with our servicemen.
Right. This is right up my alley. When looking at the Veterans Administration and the recent reports on hiding data, I think it is the perfect timing of this story to be broken, because it's been going on for as long as you look at the way that the reporting processes have been collecting data and then rewarding the reports. Okay, be careful with that statement. They reward the reports. If the reports meet a certain level, they get rewarded, everybody from the administrator down. And this is one of the dangers with a thick bureaucracy system where the end product is serving people. It's the same reason that the Obamacare process has a flaw, that the end service should be, did my clinic where I serve people do the job that needed to get done and have satisfied customers that I personally am held responsible for? Not, did I do a good enough job to generate a report that gets me paid by the federal government who's 2,000 miles away? And if the report looks good enough, I get the money so I can keep on doing the job I've been doing without the immediate feedback from the front lines. It's the same problem that happened in the VA. You will hear from veterans again and again where the missed steps are in the veterans program. But the accountability is not on the front lines of the physicians that are serving them, of the medical teams that are serving them. Who is accountable? The layers of bureaucracy, which are multiple, not just layers, but miles away. And there is the problem. It's 2014, people. There's way better ways to do this. Technologies evolve every day that show me and our medical teams some awesome, innovative ideas about how to solve this. But when you say the government says this is how we do it and it's the only people we're going to pay to get it done, you stopped allowing us to think and to solve the problems in front of us. And that is the problem with the industries every time the government takes over, is that the winners come from those picked by the government. So in the last week I've had this question a couple of times, and I'll reiterate, and although it's not the original idea, this has been brought up before, but it's a fantastic mental exercise. What if in our veteran system, we have our troops have a insurance card that allows them to get care wherever they want? Now, I know this strikes up an incredibly intense conversation with veterans of pro and con, saying the best cardiologist might not be at the VA hospital, but does not our troop deserve the best? For what they've sacrificed, for where they've been, why is it that their only services can come from a VA hospital, which was the best plan when it came about? But we have evolved, and so should our delivery models. And when it's stuck to say, but look at all the jobs that we would cut, I'm like, let's think about that. There are ways we can use these resources to better improve the lives of the veterans. The mental health issues, this is one of the places I have personal service work to returning vets, is the PTSD. I take care of addiction. And so I have, mothers and sisters and wives and ex-wives bring me their veterans saying, Jack Daniels is how he makes those nightmares go away. The number one cause of death of our veterans today is suicide. And it's not by a little statistic. It's a very real problem. And if you're asking Washington, D.C. to fix it, they put out a big budget and say, let's do it. But what they haven't found are the resources to meet the needs. Oh, nobody will take that job because the VA pays so much less than what they can get on the free market. So we can't get the counselors to go inside the VA problems because it's a difficult audience to feed, to be able to satisfy the needs. Put that back on the free market. Stop wasting the money on the administration and pay for the services. There's a 2014 answer that could be implemented, but it comes with a bureaucracy that says, oh my goodness, we couldn't do that.
Dr. Bosworth, we only have a few minutes left here, but just want to ask you about, you're one of five Republicans seeking the U.S. Senate seat. And I'm wondering what it is that you think you have to offer that your opponents don't. What is it that you bring to this race, and what can you bring to South Dakota, to the voters, the people that live here, that you don't think the other candidates can?
Right. So I think when you're in that voting booth next Tuesday, I would have you imagine who would be your advocate, who would fight for you and the needs that you have on a level where we get two voices from South Dakota to do that. And if there's been one place that I've found the most rewarding and affirming voices, it has been from the people of South Dakota that have been abused by their government. From the hairdresser who was attacked by the sales board, from the single mom who had to deal with social services and the naughty things they did to her and her children, from the weed board that used their power against a farmer where it was completely abusive. Again and again, I find that the places where citizens feel they have no voice when big government says, oh, stop doing that. It doesn't matter if the intent was correct. What you're doing broke a letter somewhere, and I gotcha. And I would have you imagine who would have the most passion, drive, and grit to be your advocate. And I would have you think of that on Tuesday.
You've had a rather busy week, a couple of press conferences, including the one earlier this week, decrying what you described as some of the hateful, misogynistic things you've been called on the internet. I'm wondering if the campaign, if this has been an unpleasant experience for you.
It's all American. Let's put it that way. We've got people involved and we've got politics. So plan for messiness.
And
I would tell you a couple of, when you look at the motivation behind that, for 10 months, I've been seeking an interview that I just had, which was all about the issues, all about what drove me to do this. This, my comfort zone is behind that exam room door, talking to patients, serving them and caring for them. Why in the world would I throw myself on a grenade in a time when politics is the lowest report of satisfaction in the history of our country? And I'm leaving one of the best professions for satisfaction, which is physicians, although with Obamacare, we've got trouble ahead. And you look at the starving need to talk about the issues. Yet all the number of 80,000 times I've been called that name. And I've stayed quiet and tried to stay focused on the issues. That's what I'm here for. But if you recall, Malcolm X said, what do you call a black man who has a PhD? Do you remember this statement?
Refresh us.
Okay, so, well, we'll be careful in the air. But what do you call a black man with a PhD? He was making a point that what our culture was calling them began with an N, and I won't use the word, but he said, that's what someone will always call them unless we address the issues of racism. And as you look at the response, specifically by the Argus leader, who said, oh, she doesn't like the name-calling, you should get out of politics. This is not name-calling. Because what do you call a physician in South Dakota who is one of the experts in electronic healthcare delivery, who has service work beyond most people's imagination for politicians, who has an understanding of Obamacare beyond most politicians in Washington? What do you call that woman who stands up and runs for U.S. Senate in South Dakota? Crazy is the first word, and the second word begins with C, 80,000 times. This is not name-calling. This is what happens when you stand up to status quo and they know the best tool to use against a smart woman is misogyny. It will reduce her to that word, and you will not get any of your voice out. And I can speak that.
Right. Well, Dr. Bosworth, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you very much for the invitation, and I appreciate you working with my schedule today.
That's Dr. Annette Bosworth, Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate, the seat currently held by Democrat Tim Johnson, who's retiring at the end of his term. The primary election is next Tuesday. The other candidates seeking the Republican nomination are state legislators Stace Nelson and Larry Roden, lawyer Jason Roundsburg, and former Governor Mike Rounds. And to hear conversations with all the candidates, you can go online to sdpb.org. And coming up this evening, SDPB-TV airs a debate with Joe Lowe and Susan Wismer, who are seeking the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. That begins at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, again on SDPB-TV. And if you miss that, you can also hear the debate on Dakota Midday on Monday, this coming Monday. We'll also have post-primary coverage and analysis following the primary on Wednesday, next Wednesday.